Hey, welcome to the FinTech Newscast. My name is John, and with me, as always, is Steve. How are you doing?
John, how are you? Been a while.
It's been a while.
It's been a whole week.
The last time I saw you in person was March, yeah?
Maybe even February. Yeah, it's been quite a bit. And I'm completely thrilled by that, bro. That's completely fine by me.
If you people listening have seen my face, you'll know what he's talking about.
Yep.
And, you know, it has its own particular problems working from home. And one of those that people have been worrying about and firms have been worrying about and governments have been worrying about is cybersecurity, all that exposure. And now that we're more than 6 months into lockdown, we just saw an NSA guidance on what you should do in case you get hit with malware.
Yeah, I thought this was really interesting. I've always thought of ransomware as something that only affects, say, either companies or governments, but apparently it's also an issue for private individuals, right? And basically, the NSA released this guidelines, which is pretty interesting, and I think fairly low-tech ways to basically address any ransomware attack.
Yeah, it all seems clear-cut when you can read about it, and it seems to make sense. But when it's actually happening, I think you kind of need this common sense guidance so you don't freak out and do something that might not be as helpful.
You do, yeah. Do you want to walk us through through the five steps you should take if you are hit with a ransomware attack?
I will. Yeah, no, I thought this was interesting. The first thing is that NSA recommends is do not pay the ransom. I love that.
We don't negotiate with terrorists, basically.
Right. Do I have to convert to Bitcoin first to pay you, or how's this going to work?
Or rubles.
No, don't do that. Or rubles or renminbi, right. And so the second step is disconnect the suspected compromised devices from the network.
That makes sense.
So you're probably watching you on those cameras and on audio. Sure.
Yep.
Run antivirus, scan the device, remove the malware if possible, if your software, I guess, finds it. Then the next step is to scream and start throwing the device around your room. Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's what I would do. Yeah. You know, the assumption here with these steps is that you regularly back up your computer because the next step is reset the device to factory settings.
This may be an issue for both cell phones and laptops, right? Like now that I've moved to a very light MacBook Air, and I have myself backed either a Google Drive or iCloud or something. I have very, very few files on my local computer, right? It's mostly in the cloud. But this makes sense for a cell phone as well.
Yeah, right. Actually, I have on my calendar to back up my computers every first of the month.
Wow, so diligent.
If I get malware on the 28th or 29th, I'm really upset. It's like the worst possible time, right? So reset to factory settings, and if you have a backup, and you should have a backup, you'll be okay. Restore the device, run all the updates, and then disconnect. Make sure you're not re-signed in to all the social media and other outside connections that are probably leading to this problem in the first place. And one thing I noticed, my parents had some weird pop-up thing, a very basic ransomware kind of thing where it has the phone number to call and pay $50 or something like that. And I just removed the add-ons to the browser. So somewhere along the line, they had clicked something that had put the add-on. And I don't know if you can, and I cleared all the cookies as well because it might, you know, be tracking you back anyway. And I removed all the add-ons to the browser and then that cleared that up as well. But more sophisticated ones, obviously, that's not going to work.
That only works for the slightly older crowd.
Yeah. The first basic thing. But these are getting much more sophisticated, and you know, it's unlikely that you'll be able to be lucky that you got hacked by a teenager doing his first or second try.
Indeed. Yeah. Yeah.
Have you ever had any malware or ransomware kind of things?
I have not. No, I'm pretty careful. I only download stuff that I'm fairly certain where it comes from. I have very few add-ons on my browser, mostly sort of pixel blocking things. Honey, which I love, which you know was acquired by Visa, so it's not a threat as well. But yeah, I've never had an issue, thankfully.
Yeah, good. An important advice I've seen from other places is don't click the links from the emails. These emails from your bank, from your utility, what have you. They look exactly like the real thing. Generally good to just go directly to that website. Just type it in yourself.
Right.
Rather than clicking the link in the email. I mean, they can social engineer. They can find out about so much about you. They'll get the right bank. They'll get the right. They know how those emails look.
Yeah. If you must make a phone call, call the number on the back of your card.
Fortunately, once your computer is safe, you can work on good financial planning. And we have the perfect person for that this week, Rami Saragadeen, the co-founder and CEO of Honeyfy. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Great, great. So you have any experience getting hacked?
Thankfully, I've not been hacked, but I will say I've one late night of following the YouTube algorithm, found my way to a video of a guy who would reverse hack the ransomware folks. So essentially, he managed to trick them into letting him take over their computer and deleting all their info. So it was quite enjoyable to see the other way around.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, big ups to that guy.
Yeah.
That's kind of like what I've seen with those apps. And then some people actually just stay on the phone with the robocallers and try to keep them as long as possible to waste their time. so they won't do that. I have an app called RoboBlocker, I think it's called. And it just has a recorded kind of thing so that they'll stay on the line. And you can hear this whole long interaction they have with this recorded message. Mm.
That's interesting. I actually I have an app on my phone that when I get a phone call, I get three menu buttons. I get accept, decline, or screen. And screen will actually be sort of the Google duplex service saying, hey, this is Steve's phone. Why are you calling? What's your name? And then you can see the transcript real time. Whether they're
That's awesome.
You know, yeah, it's incredible. And it's whether, you know, I got a call this morning pretty early, like 7 a.m. or so. Asking me to renew my auto insurance. And I was like, I know that I'm like, this is obviously a scam, but you can see them like, please renew your auto insurance or we have to pay whatever. So it's a great service. It's a shame that we have to use these services, but it's a pretty good service from the consumer perspective.
Absolutely. With the politics, I get so many robocalls from ex-candidate and, you know, it would be great to kind of waste some of their time as well.
Oh yeah. You're in a battleground state, right? In North Carolina.
Yes, we are a deep purple. So I guess I'm very important. My vote is very important.
Yeah, I think your vote counts much more than ours. So tell us about Honeyfy and what you guys do.
Yeah, so Honeyfy, we're a service to help couples manage their finances together. We like to say we are trying to save your relationship. It's no surprise money is a big challenge in relationships. In fact, it's the number one cause of stress and divorce. And Honeyfy allows couples to work together on their household finances, so spending, budget, bills, and also save for goals together. So if you're trying to buy a home, save for that down payment, or post-COVID world, again, go on vacation, Honeyfy can help you with that.
Wow. So do you have an indicator on your website? This is how many divorces avoided and it kind of keeps scrolling?
Yeah, it's just a counter. It's kind of like the debt counter.
Right.
we don't, but we love doing customer interviews and hearing some of the great stories from them. It really keeps us, honestly keeps us motivated. Right?
Oh, what's a good story that you've heard?
So I'll change a little bit of the details to protect the innocent, but the short version of one is we had a couple that's been with us for roughly 6 months now. And prior to Honeyfy, she said, basically, you know, whenever we'd have a conversation about money, I was either yelling or crying. And now post Honeyfy, we're having real actual conversations about it. Part of it is that she said, Honeyfy is sort of that neutral third party that they've agreed upon. So, you know, we've agreed on this budget, we're sticking to it. And if somebody says, hey, we need to manage our spend a little bit better, or why are we spending here? It's not one attacking the other. It's, hey, it's Honeyfy that's kind of doing it. So we get to play the bad guy, I guess.
Blame Honeyfy. I love it.
But on the positive side, I'll give you another anecdote. We talked to another couple who they go out to dinner, and they sort of set a certain amount of money aside for that. And they jokingly say, you know, whenever they go buy something, they're like, I wonder how long it's going to be before she tells us what happened, or she tells us, you know, how we're doing. And so Honey Fly has become a sort of personified, I guess, in their relationship, as because we get sent alerts when you make transactions and things like that. So it was kind of funny.
So what are some of those tools? So it gives you an alert. I love the interface, by the way. It looks very slick.
Thank you. Thank you. So, yeah, I mean, HoneyFi, we do, like many financial apps, we offer budgeting. And what we'll do is we'll, I guess, to take a step back, kind of one of the key things when you sign up for HoneyFi is each person in the relationship signs up for HoneyFi and connects their accounts individually. And we use a combination of Plaid and direct connections to financial institutions. But one of the unique things we let you do is actually choose what you want to share with your partner. As 2/3 of today's couples don't fully merge their finances, even after marriage.
Wow.
And so it's a complete paradigm shift from, say, even 20 years ago, 30 years ago. And so, it's really important for couples because it gives them the flexibility to have a household view with what they want and a personal or individual view of what they're not quite ready to share. And it's, it's nothing nefarious. It's not, a mistress account that you're hiding or anything like that. It's, if you think about early in a relationship, you've moved in with your partner, you're probably not married. You're not just suddenly going to be like, let's get joint accounts and throw all our money together. Yeah. But you still need to work together and rent, utilities, groceries, all that stuff. And then as your relationship progresses, people start to share more. They're planning together for big purchases, their wedding, their home. And so HoneyFi can evolve with you as your relationship evolves.
That's amazing. I have to say that I think that's the killer feature here is the fact that you're able to work together towards their financial goals. So say you want to save for a vacation or a down payment or something, and having that in one platform is really, really useful. And as you say, having somebody else, in this case HoneyFi, essentially give you the the alerts and sort of prod you to do the actions that you should take, I think would be amazing for a couple. Just a quick story here. My wife and I, we didn't actually merge our finances until I'd say a year or two or three of our marriage. And I think that we would have definitely benefited from something like this, so that we would have understood better where we stood, what our goals were. And also, there's something that we should have done before, but maybe even have, as you mentioned earlier, that somewhat difficult conversation about what should our finances look like, right? What are our shared goals? So I see this as a great way to sort of initiate those conversations that will just put you on a better marital path.
100%. And that's the goal for us, is to help couples have that conversation, because so many put it off to either the point where the relationship has a breaking point, or to where they've suddenly have an emergency and somebody's lost their job, or they they're about to have a kid, and then all of a sudden they're scrambling to figure out what's going on. And to your point, we want couples to get ahead of that and start to open up to each other and work together. To give you a couple other things, from the motivation perspective, we actually have something called spending challenges, where you can compete or collaborate with your partner to hit a goal. So say, for example, dining out is a challenge for you guys. You can compete to spend less dining out. And it's, behavioral science 101. You're more likely to reach that goal if you're doing it with somebody that's going to keep you accountable. Mm-hmm. And that's a really fun one. And and you can set a little reward. We leave it open. So if you, whatever the reward is that you and your partner want to give each other, you can do that.
I always beat her on the spending less on clothes challenge.
Well, so the beauty is that I don't know what your vice is, but she can be challenged in clothes, and you can be challenged in, I don't know, whatever your vice is, golf or wine.
Right.
Yeah, that's certainly not my vice. I think that, yeah, if my wife had seen maybe the amount of money that I spend on, say, woodworking supplies, she'd be a bit horrified.
There you go.
But yeah, I guess more openness is a bit better. Can you walk us here through sort of how you came to this idea? This is something that's actually not so commonplace. I haven't seen many services offering couple accounts. Why the service? Why now? And how did this get started?
Yeah, so it started out of a couple of things. So one, it's something that my wife and I struggled with. We were very fortunate that we weren't in a day-to-day financial situation, but it actually meant that we could put off a lot of the conversations that we should have been having earlier around our finances. And the other nuance to it was that even when my wife and I moved together and we got, before we were married, and we got married, we never merged our finances, never got a joint account. I paid this bill, she paid that bill. We sort of tried to keep track. And we ended up having a lot of, I'll say, lively discussions, in case she listens to this, primarily argument about our finances. Were we paying for things equitably? Were we agreeing on sort of generally how much we wanted to spend? Were we planning for the future together, especially when we started having kids? And all that just sort of started to be under the surface and cause a lot of tension, and eventually it kind of blew up. Simultaneously, I was working at Movin at the time, at Neobank. And we saw in the beginning, our customers were very much focused, sort of young millennials out of college. And all they really cared about was, do I have enough money to go out to eat? But as they started to mature, their needs started to change. They said, hey, you know, this is great. I love what you're doing, but can I do this with my partner? Or we're about to get married. Can you help us figure out what we should be doing? And those two kind of clicked together saying, hey, you know, I'm experiencing this. I can't find anything to solve this problem. And, you know, the market of digital natives who are looking for digital solutions is maturing and their needs are changing, and got together with my co-founders and said, let's go try and solve this.
Amazing. And you've been around for 2 or 3 years now?
Yeah, we've been live for a couple of years. You know, did our alpha beta before then. Yeah. Products evolved a lot, I'll say, from the beginning, as any good product should. But we're quite proud of where we are with the product.
I'm always curious about how something that seems so logical and such a sort of duh product cannot exist. Why do you think something like this was not in the marketplace before you guys came along?
I guess other people had great financial situations in their marriage. I don't know. I'm just kidding. I think there are a couple of things. So one, the demographics have truly changed, right? People's mindsets around money have changed significantly in the last 10 to 15 years. People are getting married later. They're more dual income households, and therefore there's more financial equality in a relationship. And you've had your accounts for many, many years, right? The average person gets married around 30. You've been banking with somebody for probably minimum 5 to 10 years. And so, you know, there is a bit of the shift in the demographics that's influencing this. And the other part is, I think we were, and you guys talk a lot about this, but we were, you know, as an industry on the journey of digital transformation, right? And we sort of went from moving everything from physical to digital. And then we started to create some new services, and Movin was a leader in that, in financial wellness and trying to take the data we have and give back to you. And I think the phase we're in now is the customization of those experiences. The one size fits all digital experience is not what customers are looking for. Everywhere else in their lives, they get customization based on their needs, their preferences, et cetera. And we're finally starting to see that with, you know, Greenlight, for example, focused on kids and their challenges. Honey5, we're focused on couples and young families. There are others that are focusing on retirees. And so I think it's sort of that natural progression of the digital experience that we're, and others are leading.
Do you sort of see a trend in the market in terms of consumer fintech where things are becoming much more narrow focused? So you mentioned Greenlight, which I love, you know, so, sort of give your kids allowances and manage their spending. You have Honey5. Is that where we're going now, you think, in the consumer fintech space, where it's becoming much more of a narrow product as opposed to broadening what you can do within one service?
I think so. And who knows over time, right? Like maybe we branch out into other areas as well and greenlight the same. There's obviously a point where you saturate the market. But I think, you know, it's very, I think of it very much like buying a car, right? When I was single, I drove a Corolla. Now we have a Sienna, like a minivan. Single me would have had no need for for a Sienna. But obviously Toyota offers both of those. And when I hit my midlife crisis at some point, I'll buy a Porsche or whatever the MR2, I guess, whatever the Toyota version is. And I think, you know, if you're a large enough institution, you can start to offer some of these distinct features. But I think as a fintech, you've got to pick one and really go after it and penetrate deep and win that area. So in 5-10 years, who knows, right? I think maybe everybody starts to branch out, but in the beginning, we've got to be focused.
How do you come up with the new features? Is it mostly client feedback?
I go to Joshua Tree. And absolutely. Our customers are incredible for new product ideas. We get many of our best ideas from that. We test things too quite a lot, and we're not ashamed to put out something that maybe not 100% there to see what the feedback is. And then if it's good, we could put more effort into it. And if it's not, we pull it. But I would say in the beginning, it was a lot of our ideas and, you know, based on some insights we had and some previous life experience. But now more and more of that comes from our customers.
And you're based in Charlotte, which is becoming like a banking center. I think there's 3 large banks at least now. Does that make it easier to hire, or are you worried that people get stolen away?
I mean, we add Truist in there. We have 3 massive banks, plus Ally, a bunch of others. I think, you know, what's interesting is the person who I would say 5-10 years ago would have moved to Charlotte would not have been looking for a job with a startup. They'd been looking for a big corporate job, you know, with one of the banks or Duke Energy or something like that. I think now it's changed where in Charlotte, especially, it's becoming more common that you work for a startup. People are becoming a little more open to the risk associated with that. So you know, when I was with MoveIt in New York, it's an established ecosystem from an entrepreneurship perspective. Working for a startup is a very normal thing, very much like where you guys are in the Bay Area. Charlotte's getting more of that. Am I worried that, you know, they're going to get stolen away? Not necessarily, because I think once you leave and you go to a startup for the right person, it's really hard for them to go back to a bigger corporation because you get so used to just, you know, moving it at a much faster pace and you get rid of all the red tape. And so I think, you know, once you find it and you're the right person, great. But if you find it and it's not the right fit for you, you will go back. But I will say with COVID, honestly, there is a lot of talent now that is much more open to working remote. And that's a great advantage for us, right? We can start to pull some of that talent that used to be in the Bay Area, used to be in New York, and they've now gone somewhere else. And we've always been actually a split team where we had folks in Charlotte and folks in the Bay Area. And so our culture is designed around that remote work.
Interesting. Speaking of COVID, you recently released a survey called 2020 Loving COVID-19 Survey. Pretty interesting findings there. Can you walk us through the highlights that you found in your survey?
I can. I'd have to pull it up. It's been a few months, but So this one was pretty interesting. Every so often we'll do some surveys like this. I think like many of us, COVID has caused a lot of people to feel less financially secure. To quote some numbers, 56% of couples feel less financially secure than before COVID. And that's an incredible amount of people if you think about it, right? And it's no surprise. Many of them were furloughed. Many of them were told that their jobs are not coming back, even when all this is over, as many companies have really used this as a push for automation or digitization. And not trying to get political, but you know, there was a bit of a false buffer with the stimulus check, which gave people a one-time boost. But then, you know, since then, there hasn't been anything else. And I think, you know, we did the survey post a few months after the stimulus. So, you know, you really see that impact. I think others, though, have also put their goals on hold. So, you know, obvious ones like going on vacation, you know, 50% put that on hold. But things like buying a home, even with the low interest rates, a quarter of people said, look, we put buying a new home on pause because even though it's cheap money, we're not sure that we'll be financially stable going forward.
Yeah, just the uncertainty of, you know, making a huge purchase. Yeah. The survey also very interestingly highlights that essentially half of all couples say that they are earning less, saving less, and also spending less, which is interesting. So it's just reducing their financial inflows and outflows by half, which is just a shocking number.
The pandemic, you know, forcing people to stay home is the only way to get them to cut back on their spend. You take away the spending options. Our hope, though, is that this kind of, and I don't say this in a judging way, but that it serves as a wake-up call for many people, right? Ourselves, like, you know, myself included, right, where, you know, you may not have realized what you were spending money on and the true value emotionally that it brought to you. Because at Honeyfire, our philosophy isn't, you know, don't spend money. It's not about that. It's, you know, spend the money in a planned way on the things that bring you joy, that bring you happiness, right? And so I think, you know, when you suddenly cut back on all the quick trips to Starbucks or the quick trips to the bar or wherever, right? You know, kind of these, you know, you go to the gas station and you go and you buy a candy bar and a soda. Maybe that's just me. Mm. But, you know, kind of these, you know, like, oh, I just spent $3 here. Or I spent, you know, and you're like, did I really enjoy that? And was it really a good use of my money? I think you have that opportunity now to say, okay, where was I spending my money and where do I want to spend it now once things pick back up?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I know that in my case, I postponed 3 vacations this year, I think. So next year is going to be a big year for travel for me. Unless we
buy airline stock, buy Expedia, buy... this is not stock advice, but this is just
buy Airbnb, buy all the Airbnb shares you can get your hands on. Yeah.
Oh, poor Steve. Only 3 vacations in a year. Boy, but a rough life there, Steve.
3 of which were domestic, but yeah.
Steve's doing better than most of us.
I don't know about that.
I had to cut out Paris this year. It was horrible.
Yes, I missed the Cannes Fist Festival, the film festival this year.
Exactly, yeah. You too, yeah. Huh?
Yeah, you know. But I will say too, though, I think what's, and I'm curious, you know, and you guys as well, you know, the working from home aspect of COVID, you know, for me and Hi-Fi, like I said, we were fairly remote ready, but it's the being home versus in a co-working space that is a massive change for us. And you know, it, honestly, trying to virtual school 2 children is more stressful than anything I've ever had to do. But curious about you guys, you know, have you had that impact as well?
Oh, I can tell you that, yeah, I keep my office locked so that my kid won't walk in here. Because this is the way things are. I've sort of become the default, you know, Zoom tech support as well. And yeah, it's super challenging. Although, you know, it's actually brought to light the fact that we can do this. We can work from home and we don't have to live in the super expensive Bay Area here. We can live somewhere else. So I think it'll hopefully bring about kind of a shift in the way that people think about where work is. On the other hand, though, I do see how being in an office can really, it's a really good way to generate and maintain culture as well. It's really hard to kind of build that culture and esprit de corps that you would if you're in an office from mm-hmm. home over Zoom or over Teams, which I do basically all day long. So there are pluses and minuses. I think that from my personal preference would be to maybe go to the office 2 or 3 times a week at most, so that mm-hmm. I'm flexible to both, you know, stay at home, do stuff here, but also be able to like see my colleagues, go have a coffee, go have those unplanned interactions, which actually lead to a lot of good stuff at work as well.
Yeah, no, for sure. I was reading about where you think sort of the future is these edge co-working spaces, you know, similar to edge computing, where you'll no longer maybe go all the way into, say, the city, whether, you know, it's New York or whatever, but you'll have a group of your folks that are working just outside the city, closer to maybe the more residential areas in the suburbs. So you still get a bit of that, you know, interaction, but you're not all going to headquarters downtown.
And right.
It'll be interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And also from a company perspective, you wouldn't be paying those downtown rents, right? If you're not in the core city center, you're not paying for the extremely expensive square footage.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's interesting. The interaction doesn't necessarily have to be just at the office. The way I met Steve was we're both volunteering, but through a company function. So there's
sure.
You can create kind of experiences together kind of thing.
No, absolutely. I'm part of a professional group here called Finsiders. And we, pre-COVID, used to put on events every, called 6 weeks or so. And people would come and more socialize and get to know each other. And then there would be a panel. We also put on an annual conference. And this year we went virtual with it. And it was successful in the sense we had a lot of attendees, but you missed the kind of networking aspect of it that you get with in person. So I think to your point, that'll be sort of an interesting thing where I think people will start to do more of those because, hey, this is my opportunity to see people face to face and meet new people or walking around downtown or whatever you might see them otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty interesting. So to get back to the Huntify and COVID thing as well here, are you able to see any sort of interesting data or interesting trends in terms of how people are spending their money as well through the service?
We can, yeah. At an aggregate level, obviously, we saw things you'd expect, right? So dining out kind of really, really went down. Travel really went down. Gas really went down. All the things where you do in your normal day. Changed. Groceries shot up. Interestingly, the Amazon only went up a little bit. I think that just sort of speaks to how much money we were already spending at Amazon. So some of those were interesting. Now that things are starting to open up a little bit more in certain states, you can see some of that going up. Again, the dining out, especially, and things like that. It's been interesting. What I'll also say is we saw with our goal-based savings that has really started to pick up as well. And I think to your point around people spending less, they're now and a little bit of the we need to get our act together. We've seen the savings balances go up pretty significantly in the last 2-3 months. So that's a good sign, I think.
So what do you see Huntify evolving into? What's your vision for the company down the line?
So, in 30 seconds.
In 30 seconds, okay. Huntify will help you from womb to tomb, as my marketing professor says. I think there's an opportunity for us to expand internationally, absolutely. There are couples throughout the world and they all face similar challenges. And I think, as I mentioned before, we want to evolve with our customer base. So as their needs start to change, we will start to expand our offerings to meet their needs.
Oh, I didn't mean literally 30 seconds. It's fine. You can
no.
You can go on. But it's interesting. And it seems like kind of tools could solve more problems. I was wondering what you saw with that.
Yeah. So to give you an idea, I mean, some of the things we're working on are deeper into specific life events. Think about those big moments in your life where you had to make big financial decisions, whether it was buying a home or getting married or when you have a baby. And we hear from our customers that, hey, these are some of the things that we want more help with, right? So we're starting to invest some time into that part of the product. And we're really, really excited about some of the stuff that we're building there. Can't share too much, but some of the things along there will be pretty powerful, we think, for helping couples and make better, more informed decisions. And importantly, less stressful. That's the ultimate goal.
Yeah, that's a goal for me and the wife as well. So you have an interesting kind of a solution here. I'm wondering what kind of company would you be excited to partner with in some form with this kind of product?
Sure. I mean, so obviously, there are two parts to our partnership interests. One is on customer acquisition. So if there are companies that are already capturing customers in the life moments and life stages that we look for, so think wedding space or buying a home, kind of these big moments, or if you've just moved in together, those are obviously very, very exciting opportunities. And then there's the supply side of our business. So we partner with financial institutions to offer their products within Honeyfy. And so open to talking to different financial institutions about how we could work. To give you an interesting insight, 70% roughly of couples do not bank, primary bank, at the same institution. And so Honeyfy could be a great way for us to introduce your products and services to the household. And so, if this individual, call them player one, banks with you, but their spouse, player two, does not, we can partner with you to offer Honeyfy to them. And then when the time is right, offer different products and services through Honeyfy. It's kind of a Trojan horse, if you will, in a good way.
That's been a strategy for a lot of fintechs. Well, thanks for that advice and a very interesting product and a really cool approach. Thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, that's Rami Saragadin, co-founder and CEO of Honeyfy. Please hit subscribe to keep up with this and the latest in fintech news, and thank you for listening.